Education Committee will come to order. Today we have the governor's budget presentation from the Department of Transportation. And first we're going to hear from Lieutenant Governor and Commissioner Carol Molnau and Mr. Gray and then several of the district engineers. So, Lieutenant Governor, welcome and thanks for taking the time today to come over and talk with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't tell you how pleased I am to be here to submit MnDOT's 2008-2009 budget recommendations. It includes investments in transportation improvements, maintenance, safety, and operations, totaling more than $4.2 billion. This is a 4% increase over the amount the legislature approved for the 2006-2007 budget. And the sources of these funds are from state motor vehicle fuel taxes, vehicle registration fees, MnDOT's vehicle sales tax, or I should say motor vehicle sales tax, state general fund, and federal transportation funds. The budget was developed under a bottom-up philosophy, incorporating the best professional input of department managers throughout the agency. The process resulted in a budget that addresses state priorities of maintaining and preserving our existing infrastructure, making safety improvements, investing in projects that improve mobility and reduce congestion, and continually improving MnDOT service and efficiency. This budget also incorporates the most recent Pawlenty-Molnau transportation finance proposal, which has five main elements: a one-time $100 million general fund appropriation to supplement statewide funding for the next two road construction years, dedicating the sales tax revenues from leased vehicles to transportation by including those revenues in the base of the constitutionally dedicated motor vehicle sales tax. This proposal would provide an additional $65 million for state highways, local roads, and transit for the biennium. Exempting certain trunk highway expenditures from paying state sales taxes, which will save the trunk highway fund about $4 million per year. A proposal for a public-private demonstration project to promote and study mileage-based transportation user fees as a replacement to the current gas tax-based funding system we have today. And, of course, a $1.7 billion 10-year bonding program to leverage new MVEST revenues and accelerate more than 25 high-priority projects years ahead of their original schedules. Bonding was a dedicated revenue source for debt retirement is a proven effective strategy for leveraging resources to return results for the citizens of the state. The bond accelerated projects achieved and accomplished through the 2003 Pawlenty-Molnau transportation funding package also doubled our construction program and delivered safety and congestion benefits to citizens years ahead of schedule. These and other efforts have helped Minnesota post the lowest number of traffic fatalities in 45 years on Minnesota highways. They've also helped reduce congestion in the Twin Cities 3 years in a row. Bonding investments have also helped improve the condition of state and local bridges across the state, have supported one of the most vibrant rural transit systems in the country, and has helped provide the Twin Cities with the most bus-only shoulders of any metropolitan area. Overall, this budget reflects this administration's transportation priorities to be good stewards of the system, improving safety, advance long-delayed priority projects, and be effective and efficient with tax dollars. Kevin Gray is going to present more details about the budget recommendation in just a few minutes. But first, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the new term we're in and the new leadership that we've found within MnDOT. I'm pleased to introduce to you today Lisa Fries. She's MnDOT's new deputy commissioner. Lisa brings with her 23 years of government planning expertise to this position. In her previous position as South Area Management Manager for MnDOT's Metro District, Lisa was responsible for coordinating MnDOT's plans and project activities for an area that included Carver, Dakota, and Scott counties. With her proven leadership in the transportation industry, Lisa will excel in the challenges that face all of us in the years to come. If I might, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask our Deputy Commissioner, Lisa Fries, to say a few words to the committee.
Ms. Fries, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Murphy and members of the committee. I'd like to thank the Lieutenant Governor for asking me to make a couple of comments. I'm very happy to be before you here today, and I want to let you know that I'm looking forward to working with all of you. I'm looking forward to building on the quality programs and the innovations that the MnDOT staff are known for and continue to deliver to the citizens of Minnesota. I expect to be an integral part of the development of the 2000 statewide transportation plan that we are going to be getting started with. And I look forward to working with each of you, your constituency, the local governments you serve, and the industry as well. So feel free to call me at any time when you have questions. And once again, I am looking forward to working with all of you.
Thank you.
And we do have, we're ready to go into the budget proposal. I think Kevin Gray's here. We also, at your request, have all the district engineers from across the state present today. If there are specific questions relating to them, they are present to answer those questions or concerns. With
Thank you.
That, Kevin?
Mr. Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Gray, Chief Financial Officer for MnDOT. And today, at the request of the chair, we are going to focus on, in kind of a high-level blitzkrieg fashion, on the highlights of the budget, the financial implications of the bill that was introduced last night by Senator Day and talked to by Bob McFarland, and to support the comments and overall characterization that the Lieutenant Governor just detailed to the committee. We'll be available, of course, for any follow-up questions, but we want to make time for some specific review areas that you had noted when we set up the meeting. And again, as the Lieutenant Governor mentioned, we have our district engineers here today and in force at the beck and call of the committee. I'm going to refer you to a handout that you should each have, and we thought it would be easier just to go from the handout than trying to go back and forth to a slide and slideshow on one side. A couple of background points that I think are important. One of which is we worked very hard and have had a strategic plan in place for some time. In fact, are continually revisiting that as recently as yesterday, spending some time as a leadership team to do so. The focus is, though, on operating, maintaining, and preserving our existing transportation system and infrastructure. And I bring that point up because it's a key budget premise, and I wanted to highlight that. And like any agency or any business for that matter, our budget challenge is to make the best match of existing and any proposed funding with our current priorities and principles. So we use the strategic plan, and in this case, used a bottoms-up approach, as the Lieutenant Governor referenced, to say what can we give, what can we deliver to the citizens of Minnesota with the resources we have and are proposed to have, what brings the greatest value. To give you, going to the next page, we have organized our budget into primarily four large program areas. And those four areas are multimodal systems, state roads, which is probably the most visible piece of our budget, local roads, which is all of our county and municipal systems, as well as probably the most modest area is our general support administrative functions. Just to give you some perspective or context as to the size of the budget, and this is a $4.2 billion biannual budget. In the multimodal area between aeronautics, transit, and our freight and commercial vehicles office, we are proposing $535 million of appropriation authority. With respect to state roads, split between infrastructure investment and planning, which very briefly is two pieces. One is it's the state road construction program, which we're pretty familiar with, And the other piece is the program delivery, the contract administration, the planning and design of that program. In addition, a second major piece is our operations and maintenance budget, which is a theme at the end of the my presentation that we're trying to make some time for, so that the committee, at the request of the chair, has some opportunity to talk about that specifically. And then another subset of the state roads is our electronic communications area. Local roads, as I referenced, are both the county and municipal state systems. Going to the next page, and I'm going to go through this quickly, but this is intended to give you some sense of perspective. And I will tell you in the last-minute assembly process of this that we crossed a couple of numbers up, so I'm going to resend this page to the committee. But overall, it shows that our biggest sources of funding continue to be our motor fuel tax, and that's approximately $1.3 billion. We're in registration or tab fees, as they're known. Let me grab my numbers here. Are more in the range of, I believe, $900 million. And the MVEST portion, which is new this year, we've been on a statutory 30% the past several years, is now with the phase-in, and including the sales tax on leased vehicles, a significant feature point of Lieutenant Governor and Governor's recommendation is approximately between $450 to $500 million, including the Greater Minnesota Transit portion. That number, I should reference, does exclude any Metropolitan Transit or Met Council transit dollars, which are not part of our budget.
And Mr. Gray, what was that number again?
Approximately $465 million.
Okay, thank you.
So it just gives you a sense of scale that the gas tax is the biggest. Several years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, actually, tab fees were as big and just about beginning to climb ahead of the gas tax as our major revenue source. That changed with the modification of the fee structure in the Ventura administration. And MVEST is up, I would say, in the range of $100 million from what we would have received had the MVEST amendment not passed or the governor and lieutenant governor had not proposed the sales tax on leased vehicles to be part of the MVEST. Shared federal taxes, those are federal grants. Just real quickly, that's approximately $950 million to the agency. The piece that we probably most identify with at this committee level is approximately $700 million that goes towards the state with respect to the federal highway program over the course of the biennium. It's important to note that our modes, in particular the aeronautics and the transit, as well as our county partners, also receive some significant dollars that make up part of this mix. So those, very quickly, we'll send up a revised page, but I just wanted to give you a sense of where do we draw our revenues from and kind of the scale, if you will. I'd like to quickly move into the next page at this point in time and just talk about the budget impacts of the governor's proposal. Something that was made law by passage of the amendment and isn't technically a part of the proposal is the fact, just a reminder, that the MVEST amendment passage was a very significant piece of the revenue sources and new revenues to us, in fact, in the range of $111 million. Respectively, to the Trunk Highway Fund, that meant about $56 million is part of the revenue flow into the fund. Our local partners received about $39 million. And the phase-in, at the phase-in level, Greater Minnesota Transit, the fund that's being established there, is going to receive $16 million. Two things here. One is, I should mention, the February forecast is coming out tomorrow. So these numbers are approximations, but I don't know if there'll be a big swing. Hopefully not, unless it goes up, that is. And secondly, that the Greater Minnesota Transit assumes a 38-2 split. So we're on the 60-40 split with for the 40% dedicated to transit being presumed for this budget at 38% to Metropolitan Transit and 2% to Greater Minnesota. Now, the actual budget change items that this committee will need to review and make decisions on are around sales tax on leased vehicles. That's a significant portion. The $42 million there is the amount that goes to the Highway User Trust Fund. MnDOT's share of that is approximately $24 million, and we'll see that a little bit later. But that's the total highway user pot. The transfer from the general fund, an infusion of $100 million, reflects a significant portion of that, the vast majority, towards more construction projects. As Mr. McFarland acknowledged last night, there's a commitment, the intent to see that the Devil's Triangle project is part of that construction activity, and then we'll see that the other projects are part of the remainder from there. In addition, you heard some testimony and some background on the mileage-based tax study. I'm not going to spend a lot on that other than to say that it's important for us to have some funding to give that a good effort and to make that initiative go forward. Something that is new for this biennium is a proposal to exempt the Trunk Highway Fund from sales tax. Collectively, that's about $4.4 million a year to the Trunk Highway Fund. A little bit unique characteristic that you'll see in some of your budget book pages, if you decide to go through that exercise at a point in time, is that actually reduces our appropriation authority because we don't need to spend money on it, but it's a benefit to the fund in that it's a cost that we don't have to absorb anymore. And then lastly, I wanted to highlight on kind of the revenue side of things that positively impact us. ARMOR operating costs for the metro area, which have been previously appropriated out of the Trunk Highway Fund, are now going to be part of the whole mix of the 911 fund, and I think that's a whole separate discussion, but that's a $2.3 million biennial impact to MnDOT. Moving on to the next page, as Lieutenant Governor highlighted, we have a 10-year Trunk Highway Bond program totaling
Senator Rust.
Can I just, I don't recognize the acronym ARMOR.
Oh. That's the statewide 800 megahertz radio system, the emergency backbone. And the backbone is in place in the metro area. And, of course, part of our efforts this biennium is to expand that to areas, I believe, Rochester and St. Cloud in particular, are kind of on schedule right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yep.
You notice how I avoided trying to say what the acronym was either.
I know.
Anyway, back to the 10-year highway bond program. Of course, we'll be looking for authorization for the bonding over that 10-year period. But more significantly, for the bonds that we intend to authorize for 8 and 9, the debt service impact at our normal issuance schedule would be $12.4 million. We have a proposed for the biennium to move transfer some monies from our state road construction program to our maintenance and operations arena, recognizing the cost pressures and the challenges to and the commitment to meet our performance targets on that front. That's $13 million a year as a base adjustment. The timing change of spending is unique to our state road construction program, and it recognizes that in 08 we came onto this cliff where we've been, as you've heard, we've been using federal financing and borrowing ahead from our federal funds to bring projects forward. While there comes points and times where you catch your breath and you have to repay those federal funds, this is essentially showing that we're going to catch our breath in 08 and then get out of the chute again and go a little bit harder in 09. The net impact from a base operating a budget is essentially a zero-sum game. So the 77, it decreased by $77 million, our construction program in 08, and, of course, it increases it by the same amount in 09. So for the biennium, we're looking at the same level of spending. The governor, for all agencies, has proposed a compensation adjustment just as a recognition of the increasing pressures of personnel costs on state agency budgets. The impact to MnDOT is $18.5 million for the biennium, and that is $6 million in the first year and $12.5 million in the second. And the $12.5 million is a base adjustment to our operating budgets and our people complement in MnDOT. And lastly, in terms of
Senator Skoyk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could you give me what percent that inflationary adjustment is?
That's 2% was what the governor proposed.
Thank you.
Mr. Wright.
Yes, and I should add that that's not a bargaining position relative. That's just a recognition that we're going to dig deeper into state resources to help agencies with their personnel costs management. So I don't want to tip my hand or Doerr's hand on any bargaining positions. The airport capital improvement projects, for those of you who have been here before and for the freshmen as well, in 2003, the State Airports Fund had an accumulated fund balance and was able to lend, if you will, to help address the statewide budget problem, $15 million. That $15 million has been returned to the fund effective with this biennium, and we're proposing to add to our capital budget spending out of the airports fund $12 million out of that $15. If I could put on kind of my green eyeshade hat here a little bit, there's been a lot of talk about the fund balance and the status and the stability of the fund, and we wanted to make sure that there was an understanding of kind of what do all these in and outs do to us. So I've got kind of, if you'll bear with me, an accounting kind of CFO-driven schedule as opposed to one that's maybe as user-friendly as some of the other things. But what we're trying to reflect here is for the biennium, with the governor's recommendations, what are the things that increase or add to the fund balance, and what are things that tend to take away, and how does that wash out in the whole mix of things? And there are a number of one-time money items that we want to talk about. And first of all, the TRLF, that's our Transportation Revolving Loan Fund. It's our state infrastructure bank. That money is seeded with a variety of federal and state monies. But there's certain compartments within this Transportation Revolving Fund, and one of them is dedicated to trunk highway only. The whole purpose of the State Infrastructure Bank was to allow us to leverage more, to use federal dollars and other state dollars, general fund dollars, so that we could borrow and leverage and bring more project value. We don't have that same capacity, for the most part, with state trunk highway funds, because they're limited to the trunk highway. So we're essentially proposing to give the money back to us and put it into the programming mix. Medtronic land sale for the Medtronic Research Facility in Moundsview. This is a payment owed to the feds for right-of-way costs that were federally reimbursed a number of years ago, and that amount needs to be repaid. So we're proposing a general fund transfer in to accommodate that payment to the FHWA. Now, it gets a little busy here. Ongoing sources, things that are going to perpetuate. We talked about MVEST on leased vehicles, and the $22.5 million is the state share of the phase-in of the leased vehicles, sales tax on leased vehicles. An ongoing use also is for us is the flex fund transfer, and as basic as I can make that, because it gets a little bit complicated, is that when we allocate our monies through the Highway User Fund, there is a 5% flex fund that is set aside. We've used that account historically for turnback projects working with our county and city partners. We work with them in advance to identify how many and the cost of those turnbacks. And this $13 million is essentially what's not going towards turnbacks, or we don't have a turnback in place, and we propose to put that into the Trunk Highway Fund, which is consistent with statute. Ongoing, instead of revenues, ongoing reductions, things that don't cost us as much, which have the same impact as getting an extra dollar or so, is the sales tax exemption, which is pretty straightforward. That's our calculation based on the last couple of years of sales tax payments that we've made. And, of course, instead of paying for a communication system out of our own budget, we're proposing that being paid out of the 911 fund. So those are the things that pure and simple brought in more money to the fund. It's not all of our change items, but it explains what's going on.
Mr. Gray, on the 800 megahertz, the 2.3, it says this is a change in the funding source. What's going to be the funding source for this program?
Mr. Chair, it'll be the 911 fund. And candidly, the Department of Public Safety will be in a much better position to talk about that Or we have, I believe, Mr. Terry from our Office of Electronic Communications is here, could talk to that a little bit more. But I think it's essentially the piece of the metro backbone that as we go forward with the rollout to Rochester and St. Cloud, we're proposing all this to be funded out of the 911 fund. I think it's a consistency sort of angle, and that it would keep and that's the share that we've been paying from a trunk highway fund for the metro backbone of this 800 megahertz system.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
And then also, where is the ongoing revenue coming from to fill up the $8.75 million sales tax exemption?
Mr. Chair, that's one of those unique items. Essentially, that's saying that we no longer have to pay it. So it's not really a revenue stream. It's a cost we don't have to pay anymore. So just from an accounting kind of perspective, it means it's a bill we don't have to pay. So it means our net worth is a little bit better.
Well, I understand from MnDOT's perspective, but from the perspective of the overall state's budget, you have to account for this $8 million someplace.
Mr. Chair, I would leave that to the Department of Finance or others. In the whole scheme of things, I think they looked at the general fund revenue flow and, you know, the billions of dollars, and this was a policy change that that the governor and MnDOT felt appropriate. So I don't know that I can say that it took away from a specific pot of money in somebody else's budget, if that's what you're looking for.
Right. Well, there's,
I don't think we had any specific identification that way.
You know, there's already been some rumbling from counties and other local jurisdictions saying that, well, you know, MnDOT's getting their sales tax exempted. What about us? And
Mr. Chairman?
I don't know, if we had $200 and some million laying around, we would do all the counties and municipals, but I guess we don't. Senator Olson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I know it's come up, and I know what, just generally what it is, but please, what does the acronym ARMOR stand for? I can't find it in the budget book or anywhere.
I asked that, too.
What was the question? I missed it.
800 megahertz doesn't somehow fit into it.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, my name is Andy Terry. I'm the director of MnDOT's Office of Electronic Communications, and I'm in partnership with the Department of Public Safety. We're the technical lead on the ARMOR program. The acronym actually stands for the Allied Radio Matrix for Emergency Response. It was coined in the last administration to do away with the questions having to do with technology selection and choice and those kind of things that get conjured up when you talk about 800 megahertz, which is a very arcane kind of FCC nomenclature for the radio spectrum that we use. But it's intended to identify the partnerships, that's the allied, radio, that's the public safety, two-way communications, matrix, basically a computer network that ties everyone's systems together, and emergency response is the driving business need.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
I just had 800 megahertz in my brain. Now I got to reshift here.
Please stick with ARMOR.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a couple of questions on these line items. First, it's a point of a question or a clarification. I think I know the source, the 911 fund. That's paid on our telephone bills. Is that correct?
That is, Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble. Okay. That's correct, yes.
Great, thanks. On the Mr. Gray, Mr. Chair, Mr. Gray, on the Transportation Revolving Loan Fund, is that fund going away or is it just being reduced by this amount?
Mr. Chair, Senator DeDibble, no, it's not going away. It's been a very effective program for it, but there are some very compartmentalized areas or silos of that. Federal funds are in one pot. State general funds are in a different pot, so we can do transit projects as well as road and bridge projects. And trunk highway funds have a very narrow purpose. And so we're the only ones practically that have been able to use it. So it's been kind of not achieved the leverage ability or the extra, you know, purchasing power that we had hoped. So we've been putting money in there and then borrowing it from that fund and repaying it back to the fund. It seemed like a shuffle game that was not productive and it wasn't increasing investment in transportation. So that's what we're proposing. And this is the balance that's left in the Transportation Revolving Loan Fund that is uncommitted to anything at this point in time.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, so this is a one-time?
This is a one-time, and it is only for this portion
money.
Of the fund. The Transportation Revolving Loan Fund remains intact. The program itself is the state infrastructure bank.
Okay. Thanks. And Mr. Chair, how large is that program or that fund typically? What's the utilization of it per year?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'll get you some facts on that very quickly. But I believe that we've leveraged over $50 million of borrowings and investments in the past 5, 6, 8 years. And I'll get you some facts on that. But it's a fairly significant number because when our local partners have a project and they come up with an idea and we can put $10 million in and they can augment that with their own revenue streams and debt service streams and make it a $30 million project, it's a win for them. And it's a very favorable repayment terms. And that was kind of the idea behind it. But I will get you some information on that, maybe a quick one-pager.
And one more question on one other line item. On the, Mr. Chair, on the Flex Fund transfer, Mr. Gray, this is the money we use for the turnbacks. Are we finished up turning back roads to local jurisdictions, or why is that going away?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, I don't foresee us ever finishing up the turnbacks, to be candid. The monies that go into the Flex Fund are in the range of, I'm not sure with the MVEST passage if I've got the exact numbers, but I think it's in the range of $35 million a year that we're dealing with. I would say this is reflecting 25, 22, 23, about 65, 70% of it still being used for turnbacks. We had quite an aggressive program 6 years ago, I think was about that time frame, where we were using 100% of those monies. We've made some progress, so now it's a matter of syncing up the timing and the needs with the with our local partners, and this is basically the piece that we're not using for turnbacks in this upcoming biennium, and as we did last biennium, proposing to leave that in the Trunk Highway Fund, but we're fully committed to working with our partners on the turnback program.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll move on with things that are fund uses. And we talked about the debt service on the $1.7 billion bond program. The salary supplement is pretty straightforward. Those are costs that we don't have currently. And then I wanted to highlight very quickly that the governor's proposal has a significant dollar commitment towards public safety spending. Specifically, this is State Patrol. Primarily new troopers, as I understand it. And the important thing for this committee, of course, is that the State Patrol is funded out of the Trunk Highway Fund. And so this is an increasing impact to the Trunk Highway Fund. So sometimes we tend to be a little proprietary about that, but the reality is our State Patrol budget, which is, in the low $70 million range, is part of the use of the Trunk Highway Fund. So with that,
Senator Skoyt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of things. I assuming that because of the change with the 911, that all the E-911 needs out in the Minnesota are solved, so I won't expect to hear much from my sheriffs about that. But the question I have is, as I look at this sheet, all of the decreases to the fund balances appear to be ongoing costs that are going to occur in the future, and you're funding some of that with one-time money, and I'm wondering if that isn't a bit short-sighted, because it appears that we'll go negative in the next biennium if we continue to use one-time money for ongoing costs.
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoll, that's an excellent question and observation. In a couple slides, we're going to look at our future fund balance, but for the biennium, there are some one-time sources, but also as we look forward, we've done forecasts on our revenue streams, and of course, MVEST in particular, the phase-in is going from 20 and 40% to 60, 80, and 100% in the out years, so there's a very different revenue picture in the out years, but I thought that question might arise, so in two slides, we'll look at our fund balance, and maybe that will help answer, but it's an excellent observation based on what you're seeing on this page.
Thank you, Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, on the next page, I just wanted to give
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to the numbers you have on the MVEST on the lease vehicles, are you taking into account the phase-in? I don't know how you would get to the $22 million.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, yes, we are taking into account the phase-in, and it gets a little bit complex, but it's the same phase-in rate, 20 and 40%. And then for MnDOT, of course, we only get based on the highway user distribution formula, we only get 60% of that amount. So it gets a little bit complicated to see the numbers as transparent as
Mr. Chair, but then I understand that if it was fully phased in, it would be approximately $45 million per year. If it was fully phased in, which would be $90 million for the biennium, and so 20% of $90 million would be more like $18 million, correct? And then you'd only get 60% of that, so I still don't get the...
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, and I'll try and do the math. These are good questions. I'm pretty comfortable that the number's correct, but now it's trying to illustrate how we got to that correctness, if you will. When it's fully phased in at the 95, let's call it $100 million for ease of calculation here, that would be approximately $60 million that, and I'll look to my finance director to help out too here, that would be available. And then if you took, the 60-40 split between transit and whatever, now you're 60% of 60%, so you're down to 36. Oh, good. Thank you. On page 68 of your budget books, there's a great recap of this. And I'll walk through it very quickly if that's okay with the committee. The key relationship to the budgets are that the 60-40 split we talked about, and that highways are going to be, or that transit is going to be 38% for metropolitan transit and 2% for Greater Minnesota Transit. You see the phase-in schedule in the middle of the page, and you know, at the bottom line, as you look in the lower right-hand corner, you're at 38.2%. The fiscal impact is what we've talked about today in the bottom graph. Of the amount that's being phased in for this period, and again, we're on page 68, if you've had a chance to get there, it shows that the Highway User Fund will receive $18 million in 08 and approximately $22 million in 09. The CASA, or the county state aid highway system and the municipal state aid system, are going to receive approximately $7.5 and $9 million, respectively, in 8 and 9. The difference, of course, goes to the Trunk Highway Fund, and that difference is approximately at $22.5 million. The Transit Assistance Funds in total is going to receive the 12 and the 14 million, of which, if you break that out between Great Metropolitan Transit and Rural Transit or Greater Minnesota Transit, you'll see the impacts on the bottom two lines there, what the constitutional amendment does, plus the dedication on sales tax. The 744 million is how much, or 744,000 is what's going to go to MnDOT, I believe.
How do you
that's the increment on the sales tax.
So Mr. Chairman, how do you get to 41?
How do you get to 22?
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, how do you get to 41, sir?
There are two, Mr. Chair, there are two pieces here. There's the approximately $41 million that goes to the Highway User Fund, and that's the top part of the chart on page 68, the $18 million and the $22 million. And that's distributed between MnDOT and the CASA and the SAS. This page has highlighted what went to our local partners. The transit fund is going to receive from the constitutional amendment, it's showing both the MVEST and the sales tax on leasing pieces. The constitutional amendment, it shows that we're going to have approximately $267 million that goes to Metropolitan Transit from the amendment. An additional, as proposed by the governor's recommendation, an additional $11.5 million and $13.7 million is going to go to Metropolitan Transit from the dedication of the sales tax on leasing.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
So which numbers do you add up to get the 22
$1.54 million that's on the that page?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, the for purposes of highway funding, all monies goes through the Highway User Fund. So on this page, 68, the Highway User Fund has $18 million. I'll take that for the first year. You would back out the $6 million for the CASA and the $1.5 million for the municipal state aid, and that the remainder would be going to the Trunk Highway Fund. And you do that for the next year, and that's how you get to your $22.5 million. So... I think the important concept here, and I can sit with the committee or send some materials over. The important thing is that over and above the MEMVEST amendment, that the Trunk Highway Fund is benefiting from the governor's proposal to add the sales tax on leased vehicles to our funding base by approximately $22.5 million for the biennium. Our partners are going to benefit by approximately the amount on this page, approximately the $19 million for the biennium, the 5.9 plus the 7.1 and the 1.5 plus the 1.8. So we can spend some time afterwards if with any individual members or I think the whole key here, again, is that a significant portion of the revenue stream here is about sales tax on leased vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Now, looking at the colored slide on your handout, which is close to the end, and, Mr. Chair, I'm continuing to proceed a little bit differently than our normal fashion instead of a detailed program review so we can allow time for discussion and to... for any mm-hmm. questions of the district engineers. But this gives you a sense of scale of where our money is going to be spent within MnDOT. State roads construction is actually the biggest area of spending is in our local roads area. It's almost a third of our budget goes there. Beyond that, within MnDOT, our state roads construction program is the next most significant share. And then after that, we have our infrastructure planning, which is our program delivery and contract administration, our operations and maintenance, and then our other programs, including our multimodal systems. This gives you a visual picture of kind of the scale of where our investment is going. And most significantly on the left-hand side, we've got local roads, and then quite a significant portion of our budget is indeed going to the state road construction program. On the next page, at the risk of getting into some accounting ease again, and I don't want to add to any confusion, but to Senator Scow's point, we are looking at the next 4 years as part of a four-year look forward that the Department of Finance requires with any budget, and that we'll see again with our the announcement of the February forecast tomorrow. That we are actually improving our fund balance position through the four-year reporting period with the addition of these revenues and these planned investments. And this most significantly reflects the additional phase-in of MVEST and the sales tax on leased vehicles as a significant contributing factor to our growth.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Devil.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gray, if we could go back to the pie chart, your program amounts. Greater Minnesota Transit, does that fall under multimodal systems?
Yes, it does. That's correct.
Mm. What percentage of MnDOT's overall budget does Greater Minnesota Transit represent?
Greater Minnesota Transit is approximately, for the biennium proposed spending, is about $245 million in the mid-200s. A significant share of that is indeed federal funding, but that's $245 million is half a percent, approximately, of $4 billion.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gray, what of that $245 million, what's the number of the state investment? You said that was a combination of federal money and state money?
Mr. Chair, for the biennium, I believe the state investment is approximately $75 million. Let's see if I can find that.
And Mr. Chair, that's a combination of the new MBEST sources as well as general fund money.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, that is correct.
Thank you.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm back on the graph that is dealing with the unreserved unencumbered fund balances. And I'm seeing 10 and 11, you know, the fund balances are growing. Obviously, there's going to be some inflation on the revenue side of this. What do you got calculated in here for inflation on your expense side?
Ms. Gray.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoe, from an inflation standpoint, there's just a hodgepodge of estimates that were made in that. Our focus in the budget process was a bottoms-up focus to say what can we deliver based on price expectations or level of service or areas that need more or less investment. So we didn't have, per se, a targeted inflation percentage. And it also depends on the capacity of, you know, from a material standpoint, the resource we need for personnel, and all that made into a collective mix of what do we need to deliver and meet our performance targets? You know, generally speaking, we've seen inflation ranging from virtually flat or even negative for some minor supply items to asphalt-based materials or oil-based, any petroleum-based products that have been all over the map. Of course, we're down from 3.25 to 2.25 in the gas today or in fuel. So it's been a bit of a difficult process to estimate this, but we didn't use a blanket number. We looked at volume needs. We looked at some anticipated pricing levels. It was in excess of probably 4 or 5% on average in a number of areas is my guess. But it's a blend of what do we need to get the job done was our focus.
And, Mr. Chair, so you did calculate the increasing in costs in your –
Yes, both factored in a personnel cost increase and materials cost increase, and then more importantly, tried to make sure we had the resources available to meet our performance targets.
Okay, and I heard you say between 4 and 4.5% on the average.
I think that's a fair number for a number of our material items. That might be a good question for Mr. Winter. Actually. At the end of the presentation here, but it did really vary dramatically from type of supply item to varying needs and materials on hand by district as well.
Of course. Thank you.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just need some help on understanding why we had the drop from 2002 to 2003.
Mr. Gray, we're back to the unencumbered fund balance.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dole, the drop from 2002 to 2003 is quite frankly a recognition that we were underutilizing the fund balance to make investments. And so there was a conscious decision to bring more projects forward, to make more investment, and to capitalize on the fund balance at that point in time.
Okay. Thanks.
Going on to the last page, and again, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to make sure that there's some time left to talk about operations maintenance issues and district issues. The summary is pretty straightforward. It's a recap of the items that we talked about today, including to Senator Bonoff's questions around MVEST and sales tax and lease vehicles. That's all an element of that, but I think it's a quick summary from the bond program through the additional investment in operations and maintenance to a recognition of more costs for personnel, and a couple of the other items we just discussed. With that, the last page of your presentation, what I thought we would do, Mr. Chair, is I'll walk you through this, but Bob Winter from our division director for all of our districts is here today. In fact, it might be good for him to talk about a bit how we got to this point. And this recaps the portion of the $26 million transfer that we intend to go to operations and maintenance. And you'll see that a significant portion goes to operations and maintenance real quickly. $22 million between operations, maintenance, and electronic communications. And then in our general support area, we have some other costs that we're looking ahead. We want to make more investment in workforce management and human resource initiatives as we look at a changing complexion of our workforce and the skills and staffing of that workforce. And then a practical recognition that in a separate bill that the governor has proposed that we fix the facade in the central office building, which is crumbling and has some significant safety issues. So that's one of his emergency building requests. And there will be a cost to repay that over time through our lease with the Department of Administration. So with that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gray, in that regard to the building over there, that's a project that we could do with trunk highway bonds, isn't it?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct. In this case, the governor's recommendation has this as a general, since the building is technically owned by the Department of Administration, which is unique among all of our other MnDOT buildings. This is an emergency request through the Department of Administration. It's general fund supported, but we indeed would pay that back through a lease cost escalation. But in the past, we have proposed this as a trunk highway bond used because of the MnDOT purpose for the building.
Either way, you guys get stuck with paying it back.
Mr. Chair, either way, the mm-hmm. trunk highway fund pays.
So it kind of doesn't really matter how it gets done as long as it gets done.
Mr. Chair, that's a practical outcome,
okay.
Yes.
All right. Did you want Mr. Winter to walk us through the...
I thought there'd be there's been so much, Mr. Chair, discussion about the operations maintenance and as a request of Billy and others, we thought that it would be appropriate to spend some time on that topic and then open the floor for any comments or questions you might have from or to the district engineers.
Okay. Mr. Winter, please.
Chair Murphy, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Bob Winter. I'm the director of MnDOT's District Operations Division, so I have the privilege to work with the eight districts all around the state of Minnesota. And as you've heard, a number of the district engineers are with us today. The districts are responsible for planning, design, construction, operation, and maintenance of the state trunk highway system. Today I will be giving you just a little bit more detail on the biennial budget proposal for infrastructure operations and maintenance as you've requested. This is an activity which is part of the state road construction program. And just to clarify, this activity does not include the new road construction. So these are the activities that go on to support operations and maintenance of the system. Also, operations and maintenance activities are focused on MnDOT's first strategic direction, which is to safeguard what exists. And I think in our original presentation of a couple of weeks ago, there was some discussion about the MnDOT strategic plan and how that guides many of our decisions. This budget activity that we'll be discussing is on page 39 of your biennial budget book. If you want to open up and follow along there, that would be fine. I'll be referring to a few items as we go ahead. Infrastructure operations and maintenance budget provides the people, the equipment, and the materials needed to operate, maintain, and evaluate the 29,100 lane miles of state highway system, 4,767 bridges, and the many related roadside features such as signs, signals, stripes, guardrails, and the list goes on and on. The operations and maintenance activity is further broken down into seven product lines. And again, those are discussed on page 39, or at least the discussion starts on page 39, the first of which is smooth roads, which includes all the activities that relate to providing the best ride possible for highway users. The second Product line is Clear Roads, which provides for clearing roads of snow and ice and other debris. Now, the public consistently tells us that smooth roads and clear roads should receive our top priority consideration, and I can tell you that they do. Additional product lines are traffic management, which includes all the features to keep traffic moving in a safe and efficient manner along the system. Roadsides, which provides mowing, noxious weed control, rest area maintenance, and litter pickup. Now, also through market research, we know that the public considers some of these activities to be of lesser importance. Bridges provides the annual maintenance, or the annual bridge inspection, emergency and routine bridge repairs, and bridge preventive maintenance activities. Regulations issues permits, controls the work of other contractors within our right-of-way, and identifies safe routes for overweight and wide vehicles. And finally, Fleet and Facilities acquires and maintains the equipment and the buildings needed to support all the other activities. Now, also, as you may recall at the earlier presentation, the overview that the performance measures were discussed, and you were provided with this document that presents a snapshot, a very abbreviated form of summary of many of our performance measures. In addition to the formal performance measures, we periodically conduct statistically valid surveys to determine the public satisfaction with the services that we provide. Performance relative to established measures and public satisfaction are the tools that we use to prioritize work and target our available operations and maintenance funds. There was some discussion earlier about inflation, and as with many industries and many of us, inflation of fuel, equipment, materials, and utilities has significantly reduced our buying power. Minnesota's public satisfaction with overall road maintenance fell below target the last 3 years. Evaluation of market research indicates that probably smooth roads is the leading factor that brings down the overall public satisfaction. But fortunately, that trend is reversing. Current data on pavement ride quality, which we collect frequently, shows steady improvement toward the performance target as a result of the emphasis that we've placed on pavement preservation in our capital program, which is not part, as I said earlier, of the infrastructure operation and maintenance activity. Recognizing the need to increase emphasis on the priority areas, the governor's proposed budget adds $21.5 million to the biennium for smooth roads, bridge preventive maintenance, and traffic safety. And again, this is highlighted on page 43 of the budget document, if you'd care to look at that.
Mr. Chair.
Minnesotans repeatedly tell us that they want smooth roads, so this additional funding will help to meet that desire with additional funds for pavement patching, shoulder repair, and drainage and structure maintenance and repair.
Hold on, Mr. Winter. Senator Skoyte.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Winter, you were talking about this customer ride quality and how you were making improvement on it, but I'm looking on page 41 at your table here, and in FY 202 we had 76.7% good and 1.5% poor, and you set a target in 05 of 70% good, 2% poor, and we were then 63% good, down from 76, and in 06 we're up. You've gone up just a little bit, but still down from 02. Where's the progress in that series of numbers?
Mr. Winter.
Okay, I'm following now.
I'm in the middle under customer ride quality, measures the percentage of pavement miles with a ride quality index. And it looks to me like from 02 it's almost down 10%. And your target was 70%, which is down 6.7% from 02.
Well, I know the chairman and Senator Skoyte, the good. I guess I'm at a loss to exactly explain what this chart is telling. The chart that I am visualizing is a different chart. It's a bar chart that shows that our performance pavement ride quality kind of bottomed out, if you will, in 2002, 2003, and then started recovery over the last couple of years. So I guess I'm guessing that maybe there's some errors in this table right now, unless...
Okay, well, maybe we can get some more information on this. But looking at this information, it doesn't show an increase in
Well, there's
quality.
An increase from 05 to 06, and I think from 06 to 07, we're also seeing an increase in our payment ride quality. Well, we have some additional statistical data that we can provide that I think will indicate that.
Mr. Winter, you said that it was the drivability index went up from a customer satisfaction standpoint. Is that what you were saying?
Pavement ride quality, which is the factor we use to measure smooth pavements. That's correct, Senator Murphy.
Mm. Well, Mr. Winter, in your own document on page 40, it says Minnesotans' public satisfaction with overall road maintenance fell below target the last 3 years. Did you set an aggressive target and just not meet it, but showed improvement? Is that what you're saying?
We are showing, Senator Murphy, the I think the public satisfaction probably lags a little bit what's actually happening in the field. As I said in my comments, over a couple of years, I think 3 year cycle, public satisfaction overall with maintenance, largely due to pavement ride quality, was on a downturn. We know that although we're having a little difficulty explaining the data, that our pavement ride quality is improving over the last couple of years. So I would expect that as future public surveys are conducted, that we certainly would hope that the public will notice that, in fact, the pavement ride quality is improving, and over time, the public satisfaction will start to show the same trend line that that the actual pavement quality data shows us that we collect in the field.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Winter, then the $26 million that you're taking out of construction in the next biennium and putting back into maintenance is a recognition of the $36 million hit that the maintenance portion took to pay for debt service in 03. So that is trying to rectify what the data is showing.
Senator Murphy, the 2003 transfer of funds did not come out of the maintenance fund. That came out of largely out of the department's general operating budgets.
Mr. Chairman?
Not specifically out of a maintenance activity.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, Mr. Winter, that's probably semantics, but or how people view it, but there was a $36 million hit someplace. Senator Olson?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if those numbers are correct on 41, in 2002, after 2002, we would have started to feel the impact of the loss of the tab fees in the highway user trust funds. We had less money to work with on an ongoing basis. I don't know if that has any impact, if these are correct.
I think I'm questioning the accuracy of the numbers in the table on page 41. I think we have some different data that shows some different different ratings.
Mr. Winter, maybe that's just like you said earlier, maybe that's just the difference between what your research data shows and what the customer satisfaction index is. Is that Ms. Parker's chart with all the colored dots on it? And okay.
Yes, Chairman Murphy, it is the snapshot chart that I referred to earlier.
Actually, after Ms. Parker sits down and walks through that document with people on an individual basis, it makes sense. But to hold it up in front of the committee, it kind of it's pretty busy.
There's a lot of data included in that chart that you have to stare at it a while before you start to understand.
It's like walking over to the mall and staring at those pictures that have all the squiggly lines and making a sailboat out of it. So, Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Winter, then let's just go down to the next thing, which is the physical condition of pavement. And if I'm reading this right, 60.9% was going to last for 12 years, and 10.6% needed to be redone in 3 years in 2002, and in 2006 that had gone to 22.8% needed to be redone in 3 years, and 43.4% needed to be redone in 12 years. Am I reading those numbers right?
I believe, Senator Scott, I believe you, yes, you're reading the numbers correctly, but.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Winter, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I don't see how that is progress.
The data I was referring to earlier is on the pavement ride. There's two measures that we use. One is pavement ride quality, which really looks at the ride, exactly what it says, and the other is called remaining service life, which kind of tries to make some projection or prediction of how much life is left in that pavement.
Mr. Winter, to come to that point, I mean, how do you calculate that RSL?
The calculation. It's a combination of the ride quality and it has to do with the structure cracks and some of the more structural parts of the roadway as opposed to the ride, which is the smoothness of the roadway.
So that would be the actual physical parts, that whether it's concrete or asphalt, how many inches you have, what kind of road bed, is that kind of all figured into that?
Well, it's more the condition of the roadway, the number of cracks, the bumps in it, if you will. And more of the structure, the structural condition of the roadway.
So then that's just a visual. You take a certain lane mile and just kind of walk alongside the road and count the cracks, or...
We actually drive the entire system over a period of a few years.
2 years.
2 years we drive the entire system measuring exactly that, to look at the sub-base and the surface, so that if we don't replace the surface in an amount of time, the road deteriorates deeper. So our goal is to try to get the longest life expectancy out of that surface, meaning we have to address it on a regular basis and maintain it. That's one of the reasons we do the measures. The measures are really done, and we are one of the only states, by the way, that started to do measures and measured our performance. What that allowed us to do was look at those areas where we can see need based on our performance and then adjust our budget to address those needs. That's why in this budget we've shifted some dollars over to maintenance and preservation, because our measures show us that we need to address more on with more emphasis on preservation and maintenance. So that's a good thing about taking and looking at the performance and the measures of the road system. The bad part about that is people will look at it and say, oh my God, everything's going to heck in a basket, when in fact most states don't do this. And as we started doing this, we use it literally to put priority on where our budget dollars should go. So it's a good thing, but we are trying to make progress in doing that, and that with the increased costs over the last few years has made it more and more difficult. But it doesn't mean we're not going to try to address these and put some emphasis and priority there, because we are.
Commissioner, when it comes I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that MnDOT has set up a process by which they basically can grade themselves. I think that it's kind of a double-edged sword. On one side of the sword, you're getting an actual feel for what it is that that we can do better. And on the other side, it's probably highlighting some places that where we've had a lot of success. It's probably, I mean, what am I looking for here? It's a good thing and a bad thing. When you put a report like this in front of us, we're going to sit here and we're going to talk, Senator Skoy, and everybody's already picked up little nuances here to kind of highlight what we feel is need or expectation. And on the other hand, at least you have a tool by which we can get some fairly legitimate numbers and specific instances on the table so that we can discuss them. But I've got a question or maybe a comment and maybe something you can think about and bring back an answer later on. I've been talking with people in the industry about different ways to better preserve our current roadways, and it appears that there are methods out there that we can use, such as concrete overlays instead of asphalt overlays, that may be more expensive up front, but in the lifetime of a road project would actually save money. And I was wondering, and I think that some of your own research has shown that on the test roads that we've done, and I was wondering if we're starting to do any of these activities or if we plan to do anything different than what we're doing.
I'm glad you asked that question, because that gives us an opportunity to talk a little bit about Minn Road and some of the work we do with the private sector and actually other states and other countries on getting the best value for the dollars invested. And we're looking at the makeup of concrete and asphalt, their components, and we're testing that to see cost-wise and life expectancy-wise which have the highest value. And over a period of time, we're actually measuring that and then applying some of those. So it's hard for me to say. You made the comparison of concrete to asphalt. I can't make that. Maybe some of our engineers can help do that. But what I can tell you is that the true measure is not just the material. It is the material, but it's the makeup of that material, the cost incurred to apply that material, and then the value returned on that investment, meaning over in the long run, was it the best value? And I think that's what you're alluding to. And we do that and work with a lot of folks, including private industry, manufacturers, and others, to find that highest quality and most resilient piece of asphalt or concrete, because both of them have wear levels and both of them have life expectancies that we would like to push. As a matter of fact, Safety Lou is looking at the long-time expectancy and how to preserve that and push that out to, when we use federal dollars, to those long-term life expectancies, which then really is a true value. And I think we're working as best we can to try to do that. But if you'd like to talk to one of our engineers or someone here, you certainly can, because we actually do lead the country in a lot of the work we do on material utilization, reflecticity, and a lot of those things. But Minn Road certainly is one of those areas that gives us an opportunity to test all of that and then get the best value.
Thank you, Commissioner. And the reason why I ask is because I don't think it's only my phone that rings from time to time about people going, you know, I just came back from Germany, and they've got this thing where you can, this road called this Autobahn, you can drive as fast as you want, and it's smoother than the Indianapolis 500. And, then you try to explain, well, you know, we have a lot of different issues that they may not have, and you know, most times the caller calls you on it right away and says, what do you mean their climate is the same as ours, yada, yada, yada. And I just ask them, well, I mean, do you want to pay five times more for a road or what? But that's the reason why I ask. Mm-hmm. Senator Olson.
Now, Mr. Chairman, their gas taxes are a little different, too. I'm still looking at that physical condition of pavement. That doesn't that doesn't, to me, say anything about performance. It does say that in the last 4 years, we've got a greater number of years that just have 3 years of life left versus 12 years. You use that information to determine what your performance goals are going to be and whether you apply something or other by within that three-year time period or to extend that, or can you just...
I'm going to answer that, and then I'm going to let Mr. Winter. But we have our district engineers back here, and I can point to some of these folks and tell you their maintenance levels and preservation are right up there towards the top. We have others that have much more of a challenge in their areas, and their emphasis and their budgets are reflecting that. So we do try to do that. They do that within, but Bob can give you much more of a detail. And any of these folks can tell you, let's see, it's not you. Who has, I think it's Bob. Bob, do you have one of the best road surfaces?
Yeah.
You do. Bob has one of the best road surfaces as far as maintenance and preservation goes in the state. And he also
You can stand up and take a bow if you want.
By the way, he also took 2 weeks of snowplow truck driving because he thought the training was important. But and he also has two little kids he gets up early to take care of. He's a great guy. But his surface is like that. Then we have probably the 6th district down in Rochester, where we just finished some very mega projects, including Rock 52 and Orinoco and a lot of other major projects we've been working on, where the emphasis for those dollars had to go to finishing those projects and putting those huge projects out and getting them done. They have fallen behind on preservation and maintenance, so they know what they're going to have to do, right? No, right? So it's not that we don't look at it. We certainly do, but there are some things. When you do a mega project like we did down there, those resources get stretched, and you have to finish the project and then go back and catch up. And that's what we'll do. But these guys can answer the questions. I just know that our folks out there know what's going on, and they do a very good job at analyzing where they are, and they work very hard at making sure that they have the quality and meet the standards. Because we also do have a fund that they can apply for if they're within standards and allow them to get extra dollars for their district. So there is some incentive.
Chair Murphy, just a couple points real quickly to piggyback on Senator Olson's comment about remaining service life. I think that also is an indicator to us, not necessarily of the smoothness of the road, but of what our investment needs are going to be in the future.
Yes.
And we use that as, and there's a lot of interdependencies upon here about what is the construction program doing, what are we doing with material selections, what are we doing with operations and maintenance monies. An overall theme here, of course, is that we recognize we need to put some more resources into smooth roads and our overall operations and maintenance funding, and that is reflected here.
Mr. Gray, I just want to ask a question. Is the it's $26 million, right? Is the $26 million enough? Because I'm sure that my district engineer, when she comes up here to the table, is going to tell you that's not going to be enough to do the 61 project from Winona down to La Crescent.
Mr. Chair, there's it's kind of a loaded question in the sense that that one thing
I'm
is...
I'm good at that.
Yeah, I understand that. It's enough for us to meet our operations and maintenance performance targets. And what's being reflected in here is also the capital program impacts and things of that nature. An important point, you made a great observation about I think it was the unbonded concrete overlays. In the governor's package, the $1.7 billion bonding package, the complexion of the projects is significantly different than even a year ago in that I would say that fully half of the projects are those sorts of fixes that would have a significant impact on smoothness and road ride quality and things of those nature of that nature. So I think it's a really good observation, and I'm not trying to be coy on on the question is enough. I think the fact is that we need to put more into our roads on the capital side. The governor is proposing that. An element of that has gone beyond expansion projects to a couple of new phases. One is a recognition that we need to have these sorts of investments in. And I'll use the phrase unbonded concrete overlays as an example, and also some of these other measures of quick hard-hitting fixes that were commented on last night, such as the Trunk Highway 100 fix in the out by the 3M area. So and I don't want to – I'm not trying to dodge a bullet on anything there, but I think those are important points. I think your observations are good ones, and all these interdependencies make it hard to say that – increasing funding and pothole patching is going to be seen in the next week in a public research or in the next year in a van driving over the road saying what the quality is index is. But the good news is that last biennium, this committee did support redirecting some monies towards operations and maintenance with a similar discussion. And we have seen some improvement in our ride quality indexes in 2004 to 2006. Maybe we're not at 2002, but we're very markedly aware of those issues and are working hard through our maintenance program investments as well as through the governor's targeted capital project program to make continued progress on those goals.
Mm-hmm. Senator Saltzman.
Yes. On this table, Mr. Chair, as well, one thing that's missing here that would be very helpful is that you've spent so much time on the evaluation, and I am very thankful for that. But the piece that's missing is where do you want to go? Is, you know, if you have this target here, what is this investment going to buy in terms of the future? Because if this committee or this legislature passes a transportation bill this year, which I hope it does, then I think the public's going to say, well, what is this going to buy us in terms of better roads? And if you have the ability right now to do this kind of research and evaluation, there should be another piece here for fiscal year 2008 or fiscal year 2010, where it shows this is our target. This is what these dollars we hope to buy in terms of road improvement. Can you comment on that? Because I'm looking at this, and I am concerned, as Senator Skoy pointed out, we're not going in the right direction. And if what we're doing right now continues in this direction, I think the public has every right to say to us, we've maybe given you more money, and we haven't seen an improvement. Is that something that you could possibly provide for us?
Yeah. Chair Murphy, Senator Saltzman, again, I think we're struggling a little bit with the difference between operations and maintenance investments, which kind of takes care of the roadway that's out there, and the capital investment, which is what we watch very closely to try and over time improve our pavements so that so they get up to a target. And we do have target values for our pavement smoothness. We want to... flip to the right page here, to be in the good category, which when we do we measure this with a piece of equipment that goes out and drives the road, the van you've heard referred to, which measures the smoothness of the road, and it gives it a rating from 1 to 5. Our target is to have everything in a 3 or above. When it gets to 2.5, that means the road is probably deteriorated to the point that it needs to be either have a major reconstruction or be totally replaced. So our goal is on the principal arterial system to have 70% or more of our roadway in that 3 or above category. So that's what we use to kind of help direct our investments and establish our investment needs as far as the capital side of our program. Now, the roads... To kind of get back to Senator Zolson's question about taking care of the roads we have out there, our pavements in particular, we have a huge investment in pavements, and there are 3 or 4 different strategies that we use. One is an area that we call preventive maintenance. So what preventive maintenance is when you have a road that's still a new road or a road that's still in good condition, we go out and we take care of that road by sealing cracks, repairing the joints, and things of that nature to try to extend the life of that road to get more serviceability, more life out of that road. That's what we call preventive maintenance. We also, the roads that start having some structural problems, potholes or whatnot, we patch and repair those kinds of roads. And sometimes that's pothole patching, where we just go out and fix a very small pothole. Sometimes it involves fixing a bigger piece, larger piece of pavement. That's more the maintenance activities, which is what the area that I'm most directly addressing today is, that activity of kind of patching roadways between the preventive maintenance. The other area that then is where we go out and we do a major overlay, and there's a number of different techniques to do that. Sometimes we, depending upon the condition of the road and many factors, and the material that the road is made out of, we may put down what we call a thin overlay, which might be a couple of inches of bituminous material on top of either bituminous or concrete that's out there, or sometimes we do a more extensive resurfacing job that is more expensive but gets us a longer service life after we've implemented that. And we're trying to move more in that direction of the long life overlay kinds of projects, because we think they'll be more cost effectively. More cost effective. They are more expensive, so you get fewer miles done every year. But when you get that mile done, it has a much longer life than if you do the thin kind of Band-Aid approach, if you will, of putting a thin overlay on. So that's kind of our pavement management strategy: preservation, patching, and then overlays, or in the extreme case, a total reconstruction where we go in and completely remove the road and put entirely new pavement in. I guess that's kind of four levels.
Just out of curiosity, I know that I think it's done at the state, the county certainly does it a lot, is grinding up the surface and then remixing it with hot asphalt and reapplying it. Is that a cheaper process than just overlaying with new? Sometimes you've got a space consideration. You need to keep aligned with curbs and things that you need to do that. But is that a good value?
Senator Murphy, yes, that's a very good value. That's a mill and overlay, we call that. Particularly in bituminous roadways, you go in with a big piece of equipment and mill off the top 1 or 2 or 3 inches, depending upon what you have to work with out there. Grind that material up, mix more asphalt binder with that, and place that material back on the roadway in some instances. Or in some cases, we use that milled material for to build up shoulders, or there's a number of other ways we can use the milled material that comes off of those kinds of projects.
Thank you.
Mr. Winter, are you pretty close to wrapping up?
Just a couple of other points I was going to make. I think I was just about to talk about bridges. Minnesota's bridges are in very good condition, but they are aging. And investing these additional funds that we're talking about today in the area of preventive maintenance activities such as crack sealing, joint repair, and deck flushing will effectively extend the life and serviceability of those bridges. The last area that I'd talk about is comes under safety. Minnesota's very safe roadways, and through the efforts of many safety-focused organizations, the roadway fatality rate in 2006 was the lowest it's been since 1945. Some of these additional funds will be used to repair and maintain the various roadside safety features that will help Minnesota reach our ultimate goal of towards zero death. One of those techniques that we use very effectively is cable median barrier, just one example. This is a safety device that effectively prevents those cross median crashes that are always bad. They often result in very serious injuries or many times fatalities. Though they're very effective, the cable median barrier does get hit and then requires repair in order to keep it in a serviceable condition so that it will perform its function. So that's another one of the areas that we would direct some of the funds that we're talking about today towards maintenance activities.
Mr. Chair,
the last thing I would say is about our snow and ice performance indicators. They are on target, and they will continue to reserve our priority consideration in our work planning and in our resource allocation. So the money that we're talking about today does not directly would not be directed towards snow and ice kinds of activities, but towards the other road maintenance activities. Are there any other questions that I could answer?
Mr. Winter, just briefly, the snow event from this past weekend, I believe, and I haven't heard reports from all across the state, but just the ones that I've heard was very good, and I believe that, you know, the managing of the troops that are out there doing that work every day was good, and those folks, I do believe, appreciate being out there, and we got the roads cleaned up. And I think that talking with the State Patrol and a few other law enforcement agencies, they had we had no deaths due to this weather event where the state of Wisconsin, I believe, had six. Senator Olson, so good job. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Winter, you mentioned the cable lane barriers. The motorcycle folks have expressed some concern that an accident forcing them into that is a kind of a decapitation event, that they will lose limbs and prefer the concrete over that. What can you tell me about that that issue or that concern?
Senator Murphy, Senator Olson, we too have heard from the motorcycle folks that they're concerned about that. As far as I'm aware, we have not had yet in the state of Minnesota a motorcycle involved in any of the cable median barriers. The concrete barriers probably are more motorcycle friendly, if you will, but they're obviously much more expensive to install, so therefore we feel that the cable median barriers in certain applications certainly are do the job very, very effectively, very cost effectively, and they can be deployed over many miles for a fraction of the cost of what the concrete barrier would require in order to get the same amount of coverage.
So, Mr. Chairman, you say that there have not been any accidents. So, where does their concern come from? Is it?
I think, if you will, Senator Murphy, Senator Olson, I think they're anticipating, you know, what could happen. I think. You know, and there are many ways to look at it. If a motorcycle passes through the median and gets over into the other lanes of traffic, they probably are going to have a serious accident anyway. So, you know, it's kind of a risk management approach, I guess. We know we've prevented fatalities with automobiles with the cable median barrier. To date, we're not aware that there's been any hits, or certainly not a significant number of problems with motorcyclists being injured with the cable median barriers.
Thank you.
And also, if I might, Mr. Chair and Senator, in some of these areas, there were no medians. I mean, there was grassy median. There was nothing to catch. As we looked at where the high crossover fatality rates were, we did our first demonstration out on 94, with a cable system, and that became very, very effective. Also, highly maintenance, we needed to maintain it at a high level, but it really did save lives. And so those areas would not have had any solid structure barrier. They would have had a grassy median like most freeways have as you're going out on 94 or other places further west. But adding that cable in those areas that have had history of having crossover crashes, very deadly crossover crashes, we put them in, and they work very well. They're really not meant to stop semi-trucks, but they have done that, and that's that really has made a big difference for life-altering crashes as well as fatalities.
And Mr. Chairman, while I don't travel 494 that much, it's especially going east and west down on the south part of it, you've got a concrete median there that's a little higher than normal, which appears to eliminate some of the gawker slowdown, too. Was that the intent of going to that height?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Actually, that does cause a lot of problems. And it actually lights and things in the night. I mean, it makes a big difference. Now when we do a lot of our construction and we put up those barriers when we have to go to two lanes from a four lane while we're working on roadways, we did that down in Rochester where we put the paddles on and deflected the light. We have that in Belle Plaine right now and lots of places in the state. It makes a huge difference on people looking over and gawking and just really channeling their attention to that area that they need to focus on.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah, bottom line, Commissioner, is if you go off the road on your motorcycle, it's not going to be good. Doesn't matter if it's a cable medium barrier, concrete barrier, no barrier at all. It's going to be serious. Commissioner, I can. I wanted to hear from some of the district engineers about road quality and construction projects in their district, and we're starting to run up against the clock here. But maybe you can help me with just one thing from your point of view. By MnDOT's own accounts, we're about $1.1 billion of underinvestment on our trunk highway system in your agency, the functions that your agency provides. The governor's recommendation, in my opinion, is lacking. It doesn't get us halfway there. It doesn't get us two-thirds of the way there. I would say that it was a third at best. Is there any movement on behalf of the governor as to even more revenue coming to the department?
Thank you for that question, Mr. Chair. And what I can tell you is that we have tried to utilize the resources that were available to us and maximize those. We did that in 2003, having some of the largest construction seasons in the history of the state, not by dollars, because it naturally would be, but by number of projects. We've done that and delivered more probably in the last 4 years than we did the 12 years previously. And our effort is to continue utilizing the resources we have, including the new MVEST dollars that will come to us, and leverage those to move some of those projects forward years ahead of their time, making a huge difference to the infrastructure of this state. So we're going to continue doing that. I will tell you, however, that when you're in a catch-up mode rather than a keep-up mode, because we came into this lagging severely, and we are truly trying to catch up and doing the best we can with the resources we have, and that's why we're looking at other opportunities like the mileage-based and other opportunities to have a long-term source of resources for or funding for transportation. But we, I think, are utilizing and maximizing all the resources we can to deliver, and I think that has happened.
Well,
the answer is no.
I will respectfully disagree, Commissioner. I don't believe that you or the governor are using all of the resources available. I would hope that this committee can put a bill together that does a better job of touching all of those. And as I said to Senator Day last night, that we are going to use portions of the governor's bill, the bond off provision and several others, and bonding also, in a bigger way, let's put it that way. Commissioner, yes or no? If we are successful in giving you more money, are you going to spend it? Or are you going to be able to spend it? Let's put it that way.
We have never not spent the dollars appropriated to us, not from any federal dollars nor state dollars. We have utilized every dollar you have authorized us to spend in an appropriate manner, and we have done that, and we will continue to do that. We have some of the best, most professional staff of any state in the United States. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where you start, if you start in maintenance or go all the way up to design and to any other areas we serve, safety. We lead the nation because we have some of the most dedicated people, and because we apply for grants at the federal level and we receive them for safety. One of the reasons, I just need to tell you this, one of the reasons that zero death has worked so well and that we have had a reduction in fatalities in this state is because we had a coordinated effort with local units of government, with MnDOT actually taking a lot of the lead on that, working with the Highway Patrol and others to put together a package that made a huge difference to the lives of a lot of people in this state. So that's the kind of stuff we do, and we will use every dollar available to us, and we are seeking out more through federal grants, and we are receiving some of those, by the way, especially in ITS areas, congestion in those kinds of areas, and we're going to continue to do that. We've received them in environmental areas, all kinds of places, because we do have the people who can deliver it and utilize those for the people of the state, and they're going to continue to do that.
Commissioner Senator Rest and I were at this forum, and we heard the governors of Indiana and Pennsylvania say the same thing about their staffs, and then we heard the chairs from several other committees say the same thing. So, yeah, we do have a lot of good people working for us, and I think we do in transportation all across the United States.
We do, but I will tell you, Pennsylvania does come right up there with us.
Okay. But Mr. Chairman,
Senator Rest,
but Lieutenant Governor, Commissioner, do we have any roads, highways for sale?
Do we have any roads or highways for sale?
Indiana sold their toll road. Governor, what's his name? What's his name from Indiana that was at that conference? And Governor Rendell is trying to sell the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Of course, those two highways, although they're part of the interstate highway, they were state roads before, you know, like in the dark ages. So they own them, and they call it leasing. And I don't know that we want to go that route, but do we have any roads that anybody would want to lease for a couple billion?
Well, you know, thank you. That's a good question, Senator Rest. I don't know whether we do or not. I know that we're looking at all kinds of opportunities, but I will tell you what that does tell you from a national level is that transportation financing has got to have some kind of federal change from what we've done in the past, because we're not keeping up, not with our interstate system. And this isn't just a Minnesota issue. This is a national issue. I think all of us are looking at ways. That's why I think you see folks selling the Pennsylvania Turnpike, because the cost of improving that roadway and maintaining it is so huge that it's hard to fathom finding the dollars within a state budget to do that. And having a private partner help may be the way for them to do that. We're seeing Texas and other states, California, doing some of those things where they have private partners helping them build, and but they're toll facilities for the most part. And we're seeing some of that. We're going to look. We've looked at some of those, but the Make for Minnesota, what we've done so far, 394 has worked very well, selling capacity that existed. We're looking at if there's any other possibilities, but of course the legislature still has to appropriate those dollars and approve those.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Rest.
One of the things that we heard about at that conference, Lieutenant Governor, was the proposal by the governor to give grants to metropolitan areas that were willing to consider congestion pricing, which of course 394 is, but other projects that were similar, and those grant proposals are due in April, and I'm assuming that the DOT is interested in that, and I know that the cities are interested, and I sure hope that some of that grant money, I think we're prime. We are just a prime place to Minneapolis, St. Paul are just prime areas for that kind of federal money coming in for that kind of that program, and I certainly hope we take advantage of it. It's almost like the money is it's just perfect for the kinds of innovation that we can accomplish here, and I hope we get it.
Well, thank you, Senator Rest, and I will tell you that I think it's $130 million at the federal
and
level.
And then he added, I think they told us like another.
And 75 next year.
Yes. Yeah.
And
so it's
right,
about 200 and something.
Right. Yeah. Those grants are, we're looking at how we can put and bringing partners together. We're not going to do this to anyone. We're going to bring people
right.
with us,
yeah.
and if there's support to do that, then we can move forward. But we would look at trying to do a pilot project if we have local support as well as legislative support.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's being developed right now, as a matter of fact.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
I hope it works.
To that point, isn't that for the congestion pricing, mm-hmm. like that MnDOT has technically been a pilot? So would you pilot anymore, or would you just,
no, it's just
see
grants.
How that could be applied it's somewhere else?
Senator Olson, these are grant dollars, and it goes along with quite a litany of other endeavors, and congestion pricing is just one of them. As a matter of fact, at that conference, that congestion pricing, and I agree with you, Commissioner, I do believe that this is a way for us to help loosen up some of the traffic during those congested hours. But they were trying to sell everybody on toll roads, and that was the – and I just don't think Minnesota has the toll road mentality. But if we can get more money for the congestion pricing – there's no reason why we shouldn't ask for that, you know, have those grant applications written, because we've shown that that works. But I think that if we buy into the 100% into the federal program, there'll be some of us that won't come back after the next election, put it that way. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Lieutenant Governor, Commissioner, I'm going to throw you a softball. Since you brought up the federal road shortfall with, you know, all the problems that they're having with their debt and their borrowing out there, Congressman Oberstar was here, and he had some solutions for Minnesota. I was wondering if you would have any solutions for the federal shortfall in road funding that we could pass on to the congressman.
Well, I can tell you the congressman did mention the last time Minnesota raised their gas tax. The last time the federal government raised their gas tax was in 1992, and most of those dollars went to the general fund for deficit reduction. They didn't go to pay for roads. Some of that's been recovered back, but we still don't receive all the dollars in gas tax for transportation purposes. And so I'd like the focus to be back with those user-type fees back on transportation.
And Mr. Chair, Commissioner, Lieutenant Governor, so we could pass on that to Commissioner Oberstar that the gas tax is a reasonable user fee to consider for transportation funding?
If he wants to do that at the federal level, he has every right to try to do that. Yeah. And you folks can certainly do what you think is appropriate. But I can tell you, looking at the way gas tax has been functioning over the last years, we have not received the kind of increases in gas tax that we traditionally had as we were progressing as a state. And part of that has to do with better road surfaces. Part of it has to do with better automobiles. Hybrids are part of that, but just the efficiency overall. And so I really don't believe gas tax reflects the user fee it used to reflect. I really don't.
Well, Commissioner, the same thing could be said for the Invest Fund, too, which in real dollars has been losing money. But you didn't have any problem using that for the debt service on your bonding program. So
I agree, Mr. Chair, but I will tell you, anytime you put together a bonding program and you have a new source of revenue that you can leverage to deliver the kind of network statewide that we are proposing, I think you ought to take it.
Well, Madam Commissioner, we're definitely going to try to give you the opportunity to take full advantage of any dollars that may come your way. Members, and I've got to apologize to the district engineers. I was hoping that we could have a discussion for 30 or 45 minutes with what's going on. I can tell that you're all really depressed that you're not going to get to testify. But I won't ask you to come back. I know that it's quite the haul for many of you. And I do apologize for not having enough time on the schedule to get you up here. But one thing that I would ask that you would do is to try to contact some of your local legislators and let them know the condition out in their neck of the woods. I mean, like Nell Ray is our district engineer, and but you know my district is only one portion of her district, and so the only reason I know about Highway 61 south of Winona, it's not my district, by the way, is that I get a lot of calls from folks down there that think that that's my responsibility. And, Nell Ray, I haven't given them your phone number yet. So, but we do have about 10 minutes left if we could.
Mr. Chairman?
Let's just have the district engineers come up here. Maybe you can introduce yourselves and give us, like, two or three of your best minutes.
Mr. Chairman,
and then
I would like to say that I do get a visit at least once a year, if not mm-hmm. twice, from my my district engineer, and I can't tell you how much mm-hmm. I appreciate that. It's a really, really wonderful service.
Mm-hmm. I've always gotten that too. So,
well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the invitation to be here. My name is Mike Robinson. I'm the district engineer in our District 1, which is northeastern Minnesota, the Arrowhead region. We go from International Falls near our western, northwestern border down near Mille Lacs Lake, Pine City, and up to the tip of the Arrowhead with Canada. So it's a large district, covers about a fifth of the state. In terms of our investment resources, we are what we consider to be kind of a preservation district. We are in the process of shifting our construction resources from expanding the system, making improvements to the system, to maintaining what we have in place. So that's essentially where we're at. So mm-hmm. I would say, and it's a transition process that is occurring over a period of years, but that's definitely our look to the future, short of increased funding.
Mm-hmm. My name is Lynn Eaton. I am the district engineer for District 2, which is the northwest part of the state. We have about 19,000 square miles of geography to cover, and I think that is probably our biggest challenge, very remote parts of the state. And I take every opportunity I can to push a little information toward Senator Story whenever I can, and I get good response from him. And always able to and willing and able to respond to any kind of questions that any of you have about District 2.
Thank you.
I'm Bob Bush. I'm the district engineer for District 3, which is north central Minnesota. My area covers from Elk River, Cambridge, all the way up to Hackensack, over to Mora, west over to Sabika, Monaga, and Long Prairie. And my district currently has a population of around 550,000 people, and we're expected to grow by 47% by 2030, which basically puts us up over 800,000 people in central Minnesota, which is like taking the city of Bloomington, Duluth, and Rochester and dumping it in our district. Currently on the weekends, in the peak recreational weekends, we run about 300,000 people up in the Brainerd Lakes area, so it does get quite crowded up there. With that growth and expected growth up there, we're growing tremendously, and our high volume two lane roadways are getting a lot of pressure, and it's causing some safety issues out there. So we've been experiencing fatality rates on those, whether they're trunk highway systems or county or city roads. And so we've been focusing a lot on our two lane high volume roadways to reduce our fatalities, and we have been successful with the money we have spent. We're averaging around 60-65 fatalities a year, and now we're down under 50. So that's definitely helping out. We have had a lot of technology improvements in our district with intelligent transportation systems. Currently, we've done a lot of work on installing cameras and changeable message signs all the way down from Brainerd all the way to St. Cloud and St. Cloud down to the metro area. We have a traffic operations communication center in St. Cloud as well as in Baxter, and they're monitoring the traffic, and we're in concert with the State Patrol and making sure that things are reported accurately, and we're working with the RTMC down here in Metro as well. So we have had a lot of technology advancements, snowplow improvements, machine control, GPS on the motor graders out there for the contractors, working with software packages there. We've had computer CAD machines. You know, we do a lot of continuous training out there. As the commissioner alluded earlier, this last fall I did get my CDL and attended 2 weeks of the snowplow operation training at Camp Ripley to basically learn what my guys are doing out there, kind of lead by example. Basically, when I make any executive decisions for our maintenance staffing, I know exactly what they're going through that training. So it was a great experience and excellent training to go through. Again, our operation budget is running short as well, and a lot of it's due to inflationary factors, but we're trying to make up through technology advances. So that's all from District 3, unless you have any questions, comments, or concerns. So.
Under the new formula, distribution formula, are you guys a net increase or a decrease?
Currently, we're at a decrease. We went from 11.4% district down to a 10.2% district in the current formula because of various factors, but it was put together by a statewide committee. And, you know, since our payments are the best in the area, we're helping out the other districts to catch up a little bit. We are in a great preservation mode in our district. It's been that way for a long time, although we've had money we put towards expansion to reduce our safety issues. We've gone sometimes from two-lane high volume to four-lane divided, like the 371 Project North from Little Falls up, and that's saved a lot of money out there. So when we do some of those expansion jobs, we're taking care of some preservation needs and safety needs as well. So we've been doing a lot of mill and overlay projects in our district throughout the years as well. So,
when your population trend reverses and you start getting the Bloomington, Duluth, and all those folks into your district, will that reverse that percentage then, or is that percentage just going to stay the same?
Well, that percentage is looked at periodically out there. My hope is that it could change in the future, but we'll wait and see. Right now, we just went through a strong analysis of that, and I believe it was a fair outcome for today's time and the situations of the other districts' pavement conditions out there. But again, we're a high growth district as well, and so we'll wait and see on that. Right now, we're shifting to preservation mode, though. We're doing a lot of mill overlay projects. The bonding proposal from the current administration, I think, is a great process on using the MVEST dollars. In my district, we've competed in the projects that we've listed are about $142 million worth of projects, primarily to surface I-94 from Clearwater all the way down to the 101 in Rogers. On top of that, add lanes in the center of the median to increase congestion, so we're taking care of basically congestion and preservation at the same time. And we're possibly looking at redoing some bridges at Monticello, some S-curve bridges as well. So the money, you know, we can deliver that in 2009. And, you know, those good fixes that we're talking about, not Band-Aid fixes, you know, we're scheduled way out to 2024. So we're in, you know, our interstate system is 50 years old now, so that thing has to be looked at on getting replaced.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yep.
Mallory? My name is Dave Troy, and I'm the district engineer at Wilmer. We basically have the southwest corner of the state, except for a couple counties. We all go all the way from Pipestone up to Hutchinson, over to Montevideo in that general area. I just wanted to echo the commissioner's comments. We actually do have the best people in the nation as far as snowplow drivers, employees. I've been in the department longer than most of these people around here, and it's always been that way. Minnesota has always been recognized as a leader in transportation, and I think we want to stay that way. But I do want to recognize our employees. Mm-hmm. One of the things that hasn't been talked about a lot today is the inflation has hit both sides of our departments, not only the construction side, but also our maintenance and operations side. And that's why I think we're looking for some additional money to be transferred to the other side of the business, because inflation is hitting us hard, not only our employee salaries, but our supplies, salt, steel. We do buy some bituminous each year, and that hits that side as well. So the last thing I guess I wanted to mention is that we're one of the three districts on the western side of the state, and we're losing population, and it's hurting us as far as the formula that Bob talked about. But we still have the same commodities going over our roads, and that's what hurts our roads the most is the freight, and the freight isn't going down; it's actually going up a lot. So that's what's hurting us the most, and we need to fix our roads out there as well. Mm-hmm. So,
well, if we can, if we're successful in putting more money on the table, I believe that we'll be able to upgrade our bridges, and then in the years to come, hopefully, revisit the heavier truck issue with more axles and things like that. But that's going to be difficult for us to do right now, considering that a ton is a ton on a bridge. Doesn't matter how many wheels you have underneath of it, and so we're going to try to help you one of these days.
Good afternoon, Senator Murphy and the committee. I'm Nelray Sucho, and I'm the district engineer in the Rochester district, and we cover southeastern Minnesota. We have the 11 counties in southeastern Minnesota. We have a very diverse system and area in our district. We have more miles of interstate than any of the other districts except for the metro area. We have a large number of bridges in the state. We have about 20% of all the bridges in the state are in District 6. And we have, unfortunately, a fairly high fatality rate in our district as well. Some of the measures you heard about earlier depicted our district in terms of not good measures, but not so good measures, and in that we do have some of the worst pavements in the state. Our district has quite a few old pavements. We have some of the oldest interstate in the state, and we have some of the oldest bridges in the state, as well as we have three large bridges that we'll be looking at replacing not in the near future, but over the next 10 to 15 years. And that's the Red Wing Bridge over the Mississippi, the Winona Bridge over the Mississippi, and the I-90 Bridge at Dresbach over the Mississippi. So we have a lot of needs out there. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to keep pace with our system in terms of our investments. Several reasons for that, and one Dave has mentioned, and that is the cost of construction and the way it's been going up in the past. One of the things that we have done over the last few years, though, is to decrease the fatality rate, which has been a joint effort through a Towards Zero Death initiative that we're part of across the state. We do have a regional group that has been working on this for well over a year, and I contribute a lot of those advancements with the group statewide and our group regionally, as well as the investments that we've made in some of our worst intersections and segments of roadway, where we have had numerous fatalities and now have eliminated those conflict points and haven't seen any fatalities in some of those areas as a result of those major safety improvements that we've done.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator. Glad to be here in front of you. My name is Jim Swanson. I'm the district engineer out of the Mankato District, south central and southwestern Minnesota. We cover 13 counties geographic area down there, and we kind of go from just west of Interstate 35 to South Dakota, just south of Highway 212 down to Iowa. That's kind of my portion of the state there. But as many of these people have mentioned prior to me, we have concerns too. We've seen our inflating costs, 40% increase in fuels, 40% increase in salt costs, things like that, steel, cutting edges, construction prices. At the same time, out in the construction projects, jumping at double rate inflations each year for the last several years. And those things are all bringing, that's where we're at here today, talking about dollars and how we use dollars. We're very pleased with the governor's package that they have recognized that we do need to move some more money over to the maintenance side, kind of preservation side of our system, to make sure that we deliver the quality that we need to with smooth roads and patched roads and snow plowing and those kinds of things. We also appreciate the bonding packages because as inflation goes forward, you just can't keep up with the inflation. You're better off billing it today and saving that money in the future and paying it back out of some dedicated source or some source to pay it. So all those things are great things. Some of the priorities in our area in south central Minnesota, as we kind of get from the Mankato area west, it's more around just preserving the systems that we have and making sure that we move all the freight and stuff through the area. They often refer to the logs coming from northern Minnesota. I refer to the hogs from southern Minnesota. We have lots of freight and lots of increase in freight movements. We have 13, 14 new ethanol plants sitting down there where it completely changes how the movement of traffic goes. We haul a lot of things in and out of those plants. And corn has increased, you know, doubled in quantity of corn that they raise on an acre over the last 15 years. All that still gets moved around, and it all takes up resource, and it all wears out the roads. That's kind of what we're all about. We're also about safety, and one of our big concerns, of course, is our major corridors through there, where we have the I-90 corridor across the southern end of the state. We also have the Highway 14 corridor that we're trying to make sure gets improved for the economic development as well as the safety of the entire state, all across the southern end, all the way from New Ulm over to Rochester, and make sure that happens and gets constructed into that four-lane facility, which is just a much safer facility. That Highway 14 has been one of the largest number of deaths on that roadway anywhere in the state, and we're trying to address it, and I think the governor's office is recognizing that need and trying to help push for that whole area, so that all helps for us. So with that, that's about all I have to say, and again, thank you for giving us the opportunity to come before you, and we're happy to be here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Swanson, and good luck on that Highway 14 project. That's, as we all know, long overdue, and the portions that have been kind of retrofitted, I believe that they serve their purpose. We just need to get the rest of it taken care of now. What's the timeline on that anyway?
The timeline on the piece around Waseca over to Owatonna, mm-hmm. we're looking at starting it of like June of 2008, a year from this summer, would be our starting time for it. We've also got that as part of the bonding proposal to make sure we got funding there and things like that to cover it all. So mm-hmm. well, that's the timeline right that we're in. From Mankato westward on 14, we're looking at somewhere in the next 5 years starting something moving west. We would like to start that as soon as we can, again, dependent on dollars available and things like that. The need is there. It's been there for a long time. I think that's the case in most of the roads around the state. As you know, we've all identified the needs. That's not the mm-hmm. issue. It's how you finance things and in this inflationary time and how you make things keep coming together and still deliver a smooth surface to the public so they got something smooth to drive on it all the time in mm-hmm. a safe manner.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Connie Sahib-Jem. I'm the Metro District Engineer. I think I'm the last one, although Lee Burgett, my colleague from Detroit Lakes, couldn't be here. Otherwise, he would have filled this chair. So I haven't had the opportunity to be in this testifying in front of this group. I've been to the House a couple of times talking about projects, and I would welcome that opportunity if you ever have any questions about Metro projects or maintenance or whatever it may be. I would like to mention one thing. In light of the recent snowstorm that we had, I would like to echo what you said, Mr. Chair, that I'm extremely proud of our guys this weekend, how they operated out there to get the roads cleaned, at least in the metro area. I'm sure they've done the same thing outstate. Mm-hmm. This was not a routine storm. We haven't been, by today's standards, we haven't been getting this much snow that often. So for those who have been questioning our training and our number of people that we have, trucks, all those debates going on, I think that this shows that no matter what you throw at these guys, they go out there and work very hard and get it done. So that's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you. I feel the same way. Under the circumstances, I feel that they did a remarkable job. And, I haven't heard any complaints from anybody across the state, so I'm only assuming that it's the same in the north as it was in the south. Of course, in the north, you had a little dusting. Down in our neck of the woods, we had 20, 30, 100 inches. I forget what the grand total was, but Winona and parts south of there, they had 30-some inches in a couple places, and that's quite the effort, so... Again, thanks to all those folks that were out there and taking care of that. So,
Chairman Murphy, I would just like to address one other thing as I'm sitting here. I'd be remiss not to do this. And That is to say that we are looking for a new building at Mankato. We've been working on it for some time, thanks to you for funding the purchase of the property several years ago. We are continuing to work on that issue, but it is a real need for us. Mm-hmm. We have great safety concerns in that building, too, because of the large number of people that we have in there. The patrol doesn't have any space for their troopers. There's some 45, 50 people that don't have a place to come into. And we share offices with them as well as our maintenance people. That just we have 78 needs of places to put things that have to be inside, and we only have 36. And another six of them just got used up because we had to put a salt brine tank inside because we can't have it outside. So it's those kinds of things that we are ready. We thought the governor was going to put it in his package, told it was, and then at the last minute it didn't go in there for some reason. But I know that it is being brought forward in some of the groups here.
I believe Senator Sharon has a bill, and we've discussed it a little bit, and I'm pretty sure that that bill is going to get married with the MnDOT building over here, and we'll get it taken care of. I think that it, you're right, that's went on way too long, and we need just to fix it and get over it.
Yeah, so, I thank you for that.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks again, and thanks for coming, Lieutenant Governor. We appreciate it. With that, the committee is adjourned.